Right then. Two of the most important moments in Sunderland's history occurred in the 1970s. The Cup final, of course, in 1973, and the birth of Martin Smith in 1974. Probably fair, isn't it, Martin?
Yeah, we'll call that.
Two big moments. But they're followed, it's fair to say, a rather turbulent period in the club's history. Now, David Snowden has written a book about that particular time, and he's called, and I love this title, A Fistful of Doldrums, and he's joined us now. Hello, David.
Hello.
How did you come up with that title?
Oh, just a moment of inspiration, like my previous book on the Alan Durbin years. I just come up with crafting the titles, just looking for inspiration. I like to have the title in place early on.
Okay, I just felt right. I mean, what made you choose this period to write about, David?
Well, similar to my previous book, that I feel it's a neglected area in Sunderland's history. It's one that has not been, as I would put it, done to death. And it's the kind of book or the subject that I find fascinating. I like to try and write the kind of football book I would like to read. And thankfully, with this one and the previous one, there seems to be enough people out there whose views coincide with my own.
Now, the club should really have built on the success of 1973, shouldn't they? But it didn't really happen, did it?
No. Dennis Stewart had a theory that the manager, Bob Stoker, despite his obviously tremendous achievement, was comfortable managing sort of less big-time players, so to speak, players with, as one person to put it, less baggage. Big characters like, I mean, for example, Frank Worthington cropped up as being available from Leicester City when Sunderland was struggling. But Stoker would sign players like that he'd been successful with building the cup final team, but it didn't quite translate into getting over the line promotion wise, or once we got there, staying there. We'd be signing players like Rod Belfitt from Ipswich Town, and there was a few what were classed as panic buys in the September of 76 when we were rooted to the bottom of the league.
They could, and this is something that you go into some detail in the book, they could have appointed Brian Clough as manager. Who knows what might have happened there? Just tell us about that situation and how close they came to appointing him.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's a sort of parallel history running through the 77 to 79 period where Sunderland are struggling and Nottingham Forest are pulling up trees, and it's a case of look at what you could have won. Where Sunderland, they dragged the heels appointing a new manager. Stoker resigned on October the 15th, and it was early December by the time a permanent appointment was made, and there was narrowed down to a field of two men turned up for interview at Roker Park, apparently. One was Jimmy Adamson, and the other was Brian Clough. And what I was told by insiders in the club who were working there in conversation, obviously with a prominent director at the time, the story was that Brian Clough was overconfident that the job was as good as his, and perhaps arrived, so I've been told, a little bit lubricated. He'd had he wasn't drunk, but his mood was conveyed to the directors as being slightly arrogant, and that the job was as good as his, and it didn't sit well with them. And even despite that happening, it was a split boardroom decision, 3-2 to appoint Adamson over Clough. So even though he came across badly to some of the directors, it still almost happened.
Imagine Martin Smith if Brian Clough had become Sunderland manager. What might have been?
Yeah, I think it's one of them. He always says it was one of his regrets not doing it. But yeah, you just wonder whether that was a case of three of the board members thinking, we can't be putting up with this in terms of the ego and the character that he was at the time and always was, whether they just thought he's going to cause us a bit of trouble here. We're not going to. It's going to be one of them. You never know what's going to be round the corner with him.
Do you think, David, it's as simple as that? You know, if they had appointed him, then Sunderland could have had a similar kind of success as Nottingham Forest, or is it not that simple?
No, it's not that simple. If I hark forward to the book I did on Alan Durbin, I argued that under working under the regime, the Roker Park regime, with the chairman and directors at the time, at those times, mid 70s to early 80s, it's arguable whether Bobby Robson, Johan Cruyff, Brian Clough would have been successful. And one of the names that kept cropping up in the 70s and early 80s and was Laurie McMenemy. Now, he was a man, obviously, who did arrive eventually. And, well, you know, what happened there, yeah.
Yes.
Do you put that down to lack of funds or characters within the boardroom as well who wanted their own way?
I think with the Clough thing, it was more personality characters because they used to back the manager with funds. If a manager wanted a player, they would have a go. Doug Weatherall, the journalist, says, give credit that they'll have a go. They'll back the manager. In the early 80s, when I'm writing about Alan Durbin was not backed by the then chairman. And sadly, Alan Durbin did not want to sell Ali McCoist, but sold McCoist because he was not backed in the transfer market to revamp his midfield. He wanted Paul Bracewell, and they wouldn't give him £250,000 to spend. And Rangers came in for McCoist, and he sold McCoist. Another reason he sold McCoist is that he told Ali McCoist that, I don't think I'm going to be here much longer, so if you want to go to Rangers, I'm not going to stand in your way.
And off he went. We talked a lot ahead of the semi-final against Coventry about, well, the travesty of 1977, and some Sunderland fans, you know, haven't forgotten that and deemed it to be revenge when Dan Ballard scored that incredible goal at the end of extra time in the second leg. That's something, again, that you go into detail in the book, isn't it?
Yes. I think as a young supporter at the time, it was a terrible night on Thursday, May the 19th. But at Highfield Road and at Goodison Park, where Sunderland went down 2-0. But I think I was more narked earlier in the week because Liverpool and Manchester United were about to meet in the cup final on Saturday. But Bristol City had matches left over to play, and they were allowed to play Liverpool in the week that Liverpool had their eyes firmly on the FA Cup final and then the European Cup final against Borussia Mönchengladbach 3 days later. And so it wasn't a full-strength Liverpool team. And if Bristol City beat Liverpool, and so I think I was more irritated by the fact that on Monday night, Bristol City had beaten Liverpool, because any other result, and it wouldn't have mattered, the two teams meeting at Highfield Road, because Sunderland would have been safe and secure.
Okay, yeah, so there was more to it than just that one game, of course there was. It's a fascinating part of the club's history. And David, thank you very much indeed for coming on and talking to us about it.
Thank you for taking an interest in the Golden 70s.
Thank you very much indeed. Yeah, well, the decade I was born, the decade Martin was born, you know, we're products of the 70s, aren't we?
Martin, certainly are.
Indeed. Fistful of Doldrums, it's called. If you want to know a bit more about some of those stories, that is potentially a book for you.